We're going to dedicate this year. My understanding, Ezra, is that this is your grandfather's Yahrzeit.
Yeah.
So Michal asked me if I would dedicate this year in memory of Shabtai, Ben Mazal, and Ovadia. Okay, this is your grandfather. Today's Yahrzeit. So this learning should be Le'ilui Neshama. If you're curious, by the way, what a powerful thing that is and what it means, Le'ilui Neshama, you can either ask me on Thursday night or come on me after Shir. It's a very powerful idea. So it should be Le'ilui Nishmat Shabtai Ben Mazal Ve'Ovadia. So what does it mean when Rav Kook says Lifnei HaTfilah Tzich Largish Tatzorech Shel HaTfilah? Before Tfilah, you have to feel the need for Tfilah. So what is a need? So the Rambam says, right, as an example in Hilchot Deot, we saw this in a number of different places, right? The Rambam says, okay, for example, that a person shouldn't spend a lot of time pursuing his desires except for the things he needs. Okay? So that, of course, raises the obvious question. What's the difference between what you need and what you want? So how do you define need? Or, for example, that you should never experience anger unless there's something worth getting angry over. Right? So we talked about that a little bit also in the Rambam, right? So if I feel that I need to display anger towards somebody, that's very different from the fact that I want to display it. What is need? Need is not so complicated. What is need based on?
What you can't do without.
Which means that something is
necessary.
You are. A need. It's okay, it's okay. A need reflects the idea that something is missing. A need fills a lacking. It fills a chisaron, a chosem. For example, okay, let's say I say, I need a Twizzler. And I say, you don't need a Twizzler, you want a Twizzler. Well, how would we define whether you need a Twizzler or you want a Twizzler? Well, if you're a diabetic and your, you know, insulin kicks in and you desperately need a sugar high, then you need a Twizzler. But if you're a four-year-old kid and you just love Twizzlers, right, you're not missing anything because you don't have a Twizzler. Therefore, you don't need it, you want it. Okay? In fact, the wanting is pursuing a ratzon of desire, a physical desire, and a need is something that Hashem created us with. For example, at what point do I feel I need to sleep, and at what point do I want to sleep? How would I know whether I'm sleeping because I need to sleep or I want to sleep? I don't know about you, but most mornings when I get up, I can easily go back to sleep. Right? And I would want to go back to sleep if I didn't have things that were burning in me to get out of bed and go do. But I don't need to sleep. Right? So, but if I get home at 1:30 in the morning on Thursday night, right, and my eyes were closing on the drive, which is not healthy if that would happen, right, then I actually need to sleep. So how do you know the difference between what you want and what you need? Yeah.
I don't know about the lacking definition, because the child is lacking a Twizzler, and that's why they want something. Like, wanting something is because you lack.
No. The child thinks he's missing a Twizzler. He's not actually missing a Twizzler.
He doesn't have a Twizzler.
Well, let me put it. What's the implication? What is the difference? What's the consequence of not getting something you need and not getting something that you want? It's actually very simple.
You'll suffer without something you don't. Like, if you need something, you'll suffer.
Okay. Think Rambam Hilchot Deot. Which will demonstrate what? That you're off balance. If I need sleep, okay, right? The point at which want, need turns into want, is when the manifestation of what's missing isn't so severe. That's the closest I can get to defining it. So, for example, I can manage on 5 hours of sleep. I can manage on 5 hours of sleep. And when I say I can manage 5 hours of sleep, you will not be able to tell the difference when I'm giving shiur whether I had 5 hours of sleep or 7 hours of sleep. But if I slept 2 hours, you'd know the difference. Anybody who went with us to Poland knows exactly what I'm talking about. You wake up in the morning, you can do it, but you really feel like you need some sleep. Okay, so you're pushing yourself to do something even though you need it. Okay, that happens. That's not the same as wanting sleep, right? And if at a certain point you keep needing sleep and you don't fulfill that, you'll get sick. Or, God forbid, you'll fall asleep at the wheel or whatever happens. Okay. On the other hand, a human being is created in such a way that he can sleep 10 hours a day most days. So when you hit 8 hours and you've had enough sleep, you could still want more. It's not the same as need. So one of the ways that you measure the difference between need and want is a physical manifestation. Now let's go back to tefillah. Yes?
I think even if you go with what the Rambam is saying, then if the kid would get angry, are you saying that if the kid would get angry and took the Twizzler away from him, he therefore needs it because in order for him to keep his balance?
No, if the kid the next day, if a kid is anemic and he needs iron pills, and you don't give him his iron pills, eventually he'll get sick. There's a physical manifestation of something imbalanced.
Yeah.
But if a kid wants a Twizzler every day, and you don't give him a Twizzler every day, there'll be no physical manifestation of his lacking.
No,
he will actually learn that he doesn't need Twizzlers.
But if he gets angry after that, and you're saying it's all about keeping him balanced.
No, because his anger is also an imbalance. His anger is an imbalance that can also be corrected. And by the way, statistically, this is a fact, if you teach a kid that he doesn't need a Twizzler, he won't get angry. It might happen once or twice. In fact, parents who sort of respond to a child's anger or fit and constantly give in to it are creating simply more and more fits. And when you teach your children that the fit doesn't work, the fit disappears. On the other hand, if a kid has a real need, then the fit doesn't disappear. So this is an overly, nebulous definition. It's not a precise definition. It's just an idea. But I want to get back to Tzorech, okay? Because need represents the idea that there's something missing, there's something lacking. For example, you need to find love in your life. That's not just something you want, that's something you need. And if you don't find love in your life, you will experience what's missing, and it will create all sorts of imbalances in your life, right? Could be you can overcome them, that's an interesting question, right? But most people can't, okay? On the other hand, some people don't need to have tons of friends. Right? I don't personally, I enjoy having friends. I don't need 50 best friends, or even 20. I just don't. And so therefore, I don't have them, and I don't feel like I'm missing anything. There's no manifestation of the fact that I don't have close friends. But if I didn't have a wife, I would feel very off balance, and so on and so forth. Okay? This is not to judge people. Sometimes Hashem makes these decisions. I think a person needs to have children. And if a person makes a decision, I don't know, he's a Holocaust survivor, whatever it is, he doesn't want to have children, in my opinion, there's something he's missing. Whether he senses that, or you have to wait till he's older for him to realize that, etc. So the fact that I need something, right, is reflected in the fact that there will be something missing if I don't get it. Okay? Alifas, you need sleep, but you're not going to get it. Okay? So stick with me, all right? Okay. So what does it mean, therefore, that before tefillah, there has to be a need for tefillah? Well, let's go back and think about this. How do we define tefillah? And we've talked about this a lot, but I'll bet some of you will have difficulty defining this. What is tefillah? How would you define it after our discussions? Yeah.
Reflection.
Pardon?
Reflection.
Reflection? Oh, it's much more than reflection. How would you define tefillah? Yeah?
It's figure out what I want, why I want it, and whether Hashem wants me to want.
Okay, exactly. It's struggling with what I want and what Hashem wants me to want. That's what it is. That's really, according to Rav Kook, what tefillah is. Tefillah is struggling with what Hashem wants me to want, what I want, and where those things meet. Well, if I don't feel a need to do that, then what value is tefillah going to have for me? Let's say a guy says, I don't really want anything. I'm just, you know, life is good, and, you know, I met this girl, and her dad owns a beer company, and every day he brings me a keg. And I sit up all night with my keg and get loaded, and I wake up again at 3 in the afternoon and do it again. And that's awesome. That person cannot experience tefillah because he doesn't feel a need to create or to think about anything else that he wants. So how's he going to get anything out of tefillah? Let's say a guy comes to yeshiva, right? And he doesn't think anything's missing in his life. He's not struggling with anything. I'm not sure that's healthy, but he's not struggling with anything. He's just, life is good. You know, he wanted to go to his off the year, have a good time, right? So doesn't think he's missing anything, doesn't think he's getting anything in davening, isn't struggling with what he could want, what he does want, whether what he wants is what he should want, and so on and so forth. So then obviously tefillah is not going to mean anything to him. He's not going to get anything out of that process. In order to get something out of the journey to figure out who I am and what I want, I have to feel the need to accomplish that. Do I feel a need to figure out what Hashem wants of me? Do I feel a need to figure out what I could and should want? Right? Let's say, for example, I don't know. What's a good example of this? Let's say a person has an issue with honesty. Okay? A person is dishonest. But he's never been caught. And he doesn't think there's anything wrong with that. Like, what's the big deal? You know? You know, I don't know. My girlfriend asked me, like, how come I was late? And I said, oh, the bus didn't come on time. Really, I was late because I was just watching a good movie. I don't want to tell her that. I'll get in trouble. So I just told her that the bus was late. Okay. She doesn't know any better. She says, fine. And then, I don't know, a couple days later, I show up late this year, and I tell my Rebbe, yeah, you know what, I wasn't feeling well. I know I wasn't really not feeling well, but I say I wasn't feeling well. What's he going to say? You were feeling fine? Of course he's not going to say that, so I get away with it. It's not a big deal. Right? I keep teaching myself it's okay to lie. Okay, right? If I don't think there's anything wrong with that, I'm not going to fix it. I'm not going to struggle with it. Right? Something has to leave us. In or out. That's not in. You can stand up against the door, you can slap yourself, but you can't sit and close your eyes, okay? Right? So, okay? How do I create a yearning for what it is that I could have? Because if I don't have that yearning, if I don't want to change, then nothing ever, then I'm not going to accomplish anything in the process of changing. It's like going to a desert retreat, okay? Let's say a guy loves sitting base manager and learning. He's so into the learning. And we say, no, 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 you don't understand. Come on this desert retreat and be amazing. Well, why is it be amazing? Well, because we're gonna think about who we are and what we could accomplish. I don't really want to think about who we are and what we're going to accomplish. I want to work on the Tosfos. And the whole time there, he's annoyed. He's not doing Tosfos. He's not going to get anything out of that retreat. And by the way, I'm not saying whether he's right or wrong. Right? Is there a need? You know, people came here. I've talked to guys who say, like, okay, so I show up and I'm here, and but I'm getting nothing out of it. Well, what is it? What is the it that you hope to get out of it in davening? So it's interesting to me that people come to the class, what I say makes sense, what Rav Kook says makes sense, but then they go to Minyan and it's all about, you know, just making sure you say the Shema and cover your eyes, or saying Birkos HaShachar. Maybe they get a little better, maybe they start to think about what they're saying. But if you ask a person, I mean, it's January, you know, you've been doing this for 3-4 months. If tefillah isn't sort of a process of motivating myself, or if you don't feel a need to be motivated, well then of course you're going to get nothing out of tefillah, right? This is a really important idea. Do I feel a need for this process? Do I feel a need to think about who I really am, what I really want, what Hashem wants me to want, whether what I want is what Hashem wants? Because I don't feel a need for that, I'm not going to get anything out of it. That's the first question. Does that make sense? Now, how do you create a need for it? Assuming there's a value to this process, let's take for example. Let's say a guy, like, it's interesting to me that, you know, your cohort, your age group, for the most part, seem to be pretty in shape. I don't know why that is. I don't know if you grew up sort of reading more about these things or thinking more about these things, but I noticed this. Like, the first year of a writer, if I would put Nash on the table, half the guys would polish it off. Now we'll put Nash on the table at a tish, and most of it is left. Because guys have learned, like, it's unhealthy to eat, cheese doodles at, I don't know if they did serve cheese doodles, but whatever, right? at midnight on a Friday night. Okay, right? So, but let's say a guy didn't do that. Let's say a guy is 100 pounds overweight. What's the first stage? Clearly, if a guy is 100 pounds overweight, he's off balance. Agreed? Yes? Okay. So what's the first thing that has to happen?
Thinking
that's wrong. He has to recognize that he's off balance. That's the first stage. What do we call that, by the way? Hakarache. What's the second stage? It has to bother him. What is that charata? That charata, that regret, creates the need. There's something lacking. There's something wrong. I'm making a mistake in my life. I'm missing something. You know? Let's say you got so used to lying, you don't even pay attention to the fact that you're lying. Like, people, I'm not talking about, like, a guy who, you know, goes to court and lies and says somebody embezzled money when really he did it. That's like a big thing. You go to jail for that. I'm talking about the innocent little fibs that people do, right? So, one day, eventually, you get caught. And all of a sudden, the consequence hits you. You get into a big fight with, I don't know, your roommates, your parents, your wife, I don't know. And you're in the doghouse. And that's a tough day. And if you really don't get what's wrong, you just are upset that you let yourself get caught. Or you're upset you didn't come up with a more clever lie. And if that's what happens, then you're not going to change because you don't regret it. You don't even have charata yet. But if you realize that something's missing now, there's something missing in my relationship. Like one thing I could say, Baruch Hashem, Bli Anara, there isn't anything about me my wife doesn't know. I don't, look, anything's possible. We're all human beings, and I'm sure maybe I could make a mistake in the future. I just can't imagine. I can't think. And some people figure this out before they get married. Most people, if they're lucky, they figure it out the first year they're married. I'm blessed with a very, very intelligent, healthy, balanced person for a spouse, and she helped me figure out how dumb it is, even the little fibs. So I don't lie to my wife. Like, what's the point? If I don't do something and she wanted me to do it, and it's on me, I'll just tell her. She'll get annoyed. She won't get annoyed. There's no big consequence. She's not walking out of me because, I don't know, I didn't put the toilet seat down. Okay, it is what it is. And people do ridiculous things. I didn't do that. I didn't eat the cookie. Like, there's two of you in the house now. It's like when someone passes wind in the elevator and there's two of you. Everybody knows. You know what I mean? But we get so into these habits that we forget. So is there a need to change? Now, this is a challenge. But no matter how much tefillah makes sense, if you don't feel a need to do that, to go through that process, then you're never going to get there. You're never going to employ the process. So let's talk about that. Can you imagine? I challenge anybody in this room to try and convince me that you don't need the process of tefillah, to think about sort of what is missing, what I could want, whether I want what I want, right, etc. Yes, Avner. Okay. I gave you the benefit of the doubt, right? Look how far you've come. Wow. Okay? Okay, but then there's a second place. The second piece is not about the need for tefillah, but rather largish tatzarach tefillah v'ta oneg shel tefillah. Now, what is the oneg of tefillah? Right? Yeah?
To kind of say the beauty in tefillah and to like a...
Close. What is oneg? What do you obviously think of when you think of the word oneg?
Oneg Shabbos.
Oneg Shabbos. So what is oneg Shabbos? This is interesting. The Mishnah Berurah, right? Mishnah Berurah says, in his introduction, says, how are we mekayim the mitzvah of oneg Shabbos? There are two different halachot. The Mishnah Berurah is his, right? Okay? And you sleep on Shabbos. Right? When you sleep on Shabbos. By the way, it's machlokas whether if you're sleeping Shabbos afternoon, you're mekayim in the mitzvah of owning Shabbos. It could be it's only when you sleep at night. Could somebody now tell me why? I'm machmir personally, but... Pardon? No, because that would mean it is owning Shabbos, but I'm learning Torah. By the way, I always take the mitzvah, patrim in the mitzvah, just like you can daven, even though you could be learning Torah. If owning Shabbos is a mitzvah, you could do owning Shabbos. Nope. Why would owning Shabbos on Shabbos afternoon not be the same as Friday night? I already told you the answer, you just don't know it. Because you don't need it. You enjoy it, but you don't need it. I'm at least honest about it. I know that if I don't sleep on Shabbos afternoon, right? So, I'll be fine. It's not the end of the world. If I don't sleep at night, of course I won't be fine. Yeah.
Isn't that the whole point of owning Shabbos? That you don't need it, that you do it because it's Shabbos, and that you're going to get more benefit out of it?
No. Take that you take pleasure in something that you need. In other words, it's the day that says, for example, when you make kiddush, right, that you're eating at the table, all these things. They're things that you do, but you take pleasure in them, right? It's a, right, lehitaneg b'tanugim, to take pleasure in the pleasures of life, in the things that Hashem gives us. That's a whole interesting discussion. So what is the oneg of tefillah, right? So if, for example, sleep on Shabbos is an oneg, it's something I need to do, but I take a moment to appreciate what it gives us. By the way, the day that says that you can fulfill on Shabbos and sleep on Shabbos afternoon, right, is because sleep itself is something you need, and you're doing something you need, but perhaps at a time when you don't normally do it. So, for example, you eat more food than you normally eat, and so on and so forth, right? Okay? So, but what is oneg then? Oneg is connected to what idea? What does oneg really mean? Oneg connects to the idea that the things that Hashem gives us, the things that we can take pleasure in are actually things that we need. Like, for example, is Torah a luxury or is Torah a need? So most people look at like a year of learning Torah in yeshiva as a luxury. Like, you know, it's a luxury that your parents pay for you and you come here and sit and learn for a year. Like, that's not real life. You got to go out and learn a living. And some would say, no, it's the opposite. This is a need. How could a Jewish boy at the end of high school not take at least a year, if not more, and learn Torah and grow and figure out who he is? Like when you by the end of the year realize and you look back hopefully at what you accomplished here, it doesn't become a luxury at all. You can't imagine how you would have missed this. Right? So oneg can make you think about something. So what is the oneg of tefillah then? Right? What is the pleasure of tefillah? So now let's think about this for a minute. Okay? What is the pleasure of tefillah? Yeah?
It's figuring out the purpose of the things that you want to do.
Pardon?
It's figuring out the purpose of the things you want to do. It's when you realize, oh, this thing is something I should really pursue.
Well, so what's the pleasure of that? Yeah?
It's knowing the way.
Close, yeah?
I guess the pleasure is, I guess kind of like the analogy you just described, that like only once you're there do you recognize that you need it and you need to look back on it. So like, for example, let's say you go to yeshiva, only at the end of the year are you going to recognize the need that you have. So it's sort of like an after the fact. The thing that like, the pleasure is in being in it and actually searching once you're there, you have it, I guess.
Here's an interesting question. Let's say, I actually think this is one of the fundamental differences between a boy in Elul who's Shana Aleph and Shana Bet. What's the most obvious difference between a boy who's Shana Aleph and Shana Bet? If you're sitting here in January, has anybody here yet had like an hour you're sitting in the basement and learning and you're like, that was really awesome? The learning. Yeah? Okay? Why was it awesome? Why was it awesome?
Because I felt like the skills improved so I could actually understand.
You're getting somewhere, right? Okay? Now, if you knew in Elul, on the first, Thursday that you're here, what was waiting for you that you could get to that space, it would have been much easier to sit in the Beis Shemesh and learn. Does that make sense? Right? The Shana Bet boy comes back. This is not a plug for Shana Bet. It's just an example. Well, I guess it is, but okay. But that wasn't why I brought it up, right? But the guy who's Shana Bet who comes in for Elul's money, he already knows what he's accomplished last year. He wouldn't be here a second year if he hadn't accomplished this last year. And he's excited. He's excited because he knows now what's waiting for him. He's motivated because he knows what he's going to accomplish. Right? When you understand the need for something and you experience the pleasure of it, that has to lead you to motivation. I'll give you an example. So anybody here who's not into exercise and willing to be honest about it? Excellent. Okay. So you don't regularly go running. You don't really go... Okay, whatever. All right. So now let's say... And that makes sense to me, because guys who are 18, 19-year-old, you think you're going to stay in shape forever. Okay.
Just lazy
is a huge line, but we'll get back to that. Now I know what you need. You and I need to talk about. Okay, right? So let's say that's true, right? Now, it's okay now, because the physical manifestation of not exercising right now is not such a big deal. But when you're 50, if you haven't regularly exercised, the implications are enormous. There are implications for your health, for your mental well-being, right? For how you look, for how you're perceived, for how your family relates to you. All sorts of different issues that come up if you're not healthy, right? So let's say you suddenly realize, okay, you're off balance. And you decide to find an exercise that you can do, right? You don't really think about what you're going to enjoy. You just think about what you can stick with. And you find an exercise and you start doing it. And then you have that one day where you actually enjoyed doing it, right? Whatever it is. I used to really love running. I didn't always love the run, but I would eventually have a run that was like amazing. And then I busted up my knees, whatever it is, so I can't run the same way. It's just not healthy for me to run. I'm not sure it's healthy for anybody long term to run. And it took me a long time to discover biking. Now, when I started biking, I was looking to get back into shape, and I hated biking. I did not enjoy biking. Right? There's not a lot of value to biking if you're on flat. I live in an area with a lot of hills. So you're talking about, you know, riding up hills like this. So I hated it. But I tried to stick with it because I felt, you know, it was something my wife wanted me to get back in shape, whatever it was. And then one day, when I started to see that I was gaining something, motivated me to eat healthier, because if you're going to do all that work, and then you're going to go home at night and eat 3 candy bars, then that's just dumb. So you're just like, there's no way that I'm going to lose that whole bike ride on 1 candy bar. And it starts to, you know, synergize with each other. And then one day you realize you actually enjoyed the bike ride. It took off a little weight. It made you feel good. It put endorphins into your system. So now what's the difference before the next bike ride? You feel motivated. You're actually excited to do it, right? So if you can combine the need for tefillah and the owning of tefillah, then you'll be motivated to daven. And that's what you're looking for, right? It's not just about the result of a process. It's about how I create the right energy that drives me to do the process, right? Understand? So that's the balance between Tzorech and Oneg. Now, of course, there's a catch here, right? It's a little bit of a catch-22. Because until you experience the oneg, you don't know what the oneg is. You almost have to take it on faith that there's an oneg out there. It's like learning Torah, right? You don't have to sell Rav Gavriel on learning Torah. He loves learning Torah. He didn't always love learning Torah. There was a point where he had to trust somebody, right? Maybe it was his dad, who said to him, you should stick with this because one day you're going to love this, right? That's true with most things, right? So it could be that one of the challenges is that some people never had a person they would trust enough to pursue a process that was guaranteed to produce zoning. By the way, in whom ultimately is the trust placed that there's value to this? Kadosh Baruch Hu. So if you develop your relationship with Hashem to the point where you believe Hashem is asking you to do something, Hashem, like lo ba Kadosh Baruch Hu tron yayim briyotam, Hashem doesn't want us to suffer. Hashem didn't create us to be miserable. So if Hashem says that there's a value to learning Torah, if that's what the Torah suggests, then there must be a value to it. And the same is true with tefillah. But this is your year to begin to put this effort in. You understand? Okay? Knowing what tefillah is the first stage. Knowing where I'm at is the second stage. The disparity between the two, that's what creates the need. Right? If you succeed in your tefillah, one more third, and then I'll take your question. If you succeed in the process of tefillah, what would be the inevitable result? If you're struggling with what you want, and you're trying to figure out what Hashem wants of you, and you actually figure it out, you start to realize that you want something that Hashem wants you to want, what would that have to? What would you have to end up being?
Sonic.
Wow, I'm glad I'm bringing this up. This is actually not so complicated. Let's say, for example, you don't know what profession you want to fulfill. You just don't know what to do. You're headed for college, you don't know what to do. Okay, you're a sophomore, they tell you to pick a major, you don't know what to do. So you're davening every day. What is it I really want? What do I think Hashem wants me to want? You figure out one day, you know what? How you figure this out is a good question, but let's not put that in for now. You figure out that Hashem, you really believe that what you want most in the world is, I don't know, to be an artist. Now, being an artist is a difficult life. Most people don't make a great parnasa being an artist. But you decide you want to be an artist. And you become convinced that Hashem wants you to be an artist. You discover you have a skill for art. And so you decide to pursue that. So as you buy a canvas, or you walk into your first art class at Columbia, or whatever it is, how would you have to feel? As opposed to walking into law school because your mom wanted you to go to law school. How would you have to feel?
Excited.
Ready to do it. What's the word I'm looking for? Motivated. You would have to be motivated. In fact, if you go through the process of tefillah, that is the inevitable result. It is not possible to properly experience tefillah on a regular basis and not become motivated. Now, maybe a person has no interest in being motivated. If a person has no interest in being motivated, then I don't know what he's going to ever get out of tefillah. So that person, I'm not sure he's... What's the point? The fact the Torah says you should want to be motivated, the fact the Torah says you should want to daven, doesn't matter to him. So he's wasting his time. But if a person wants to see what it's like to be motivated, and he wants to grow in motivation in all spheres, not just in a particular one where you happen to be motivated, tefillah is the recipe to do that. Yeah.
How do I actually know that tefillah is going to motivate?
How do you know that tefillah is going to motivate you?
Yeah.
Well, let's separate two issues. First of all, I guarantee you it's not going to motivate you if you don't put work into it. That's a guarantee. And that's not that's anywhere from a person... By the way, this is no different from a person who's sitting in the back reading a book or a person who puts his tefillah on and he goes and says the words and never stops to think about them. They will not produce any motivation in tefillah if you don't think about what you're doing and put in the work. All good things in life, all accomplishments come from work. Number one. Number two, look... that's about trust. In other words, it could start with trust in me, it could be trust in Rav Kook, it could be trust in Akash Baruch Hu. Depends how far you want to go. If you buy Rav Kook's Shita, Rav Kook says this is what tefillah is, and he learns it after the Torah, since he believes that the Rambam suggested that tefillah is a mitzvah you do every day is from Akash Baruch Hu, then Hashem is basically telling you, in order for you to accomplish things in this world, you have to be motivated. You don't accomplish much if you're not motivated. So I've got to give you a system to get motivated when you're not. So I'm going to give you a system. It's called tefillah. It's amazing. And Chazal are going to put words to that system. And Rav Kook says, based on what he feels Akash Baruch Hu is telling us, that if you put the effort in, it's guaranteed to motivate you. It takes a lot of work. It took me a long time to get there. It doesn't happen in an afternoon.
But if it took you a lot of work to get there, then you're motivated to get there, so you're probably motivated in other paths.
No,
it's... that you meet something that's motivated.
No, no, no. It's not. It's a product of a number of different things. It's seeing people who davened and discovering they were motivated. It's finding a sheet of cook and saying, okay, everything I tried so far doesn't work, so I'm prepared to dump it, but this actually makes sense. I'm going to try this. And then experiencing some success that breeds more success. Is that all overnight? I mean, I can do a 2 or 3 hour bike ride now that would have killed me a few years ago, right? And I'm not interested in doing more. Some people do, but I can get things out of tefillah now. When I was your age, I dreaded. I didn't get much out of Yom Kippur. It was just like a long day. I thought it was the right thing to do. I finished. I felt good about the fact that I got through this hard process and I made it. It was like finishing a Messiah in the army. That's not what Yom Kippur is supposed to be. Now I look forward to Yom Kippur. It's awesome. It took me a long time to get there, but it was worth it. Right? And you could say, well, okay, let's say a person says, I never want to get there. Like he's just happy to have a day to eat cheeseburgers and watch TV. Okay, I think he's missing something in his life. But if he doesn't think that, of course he's never going to get there. Understand? Food for thought? A lot to think about here. A lot to think about. All right, let's stop here. To be continued.